It's great to be back here, and I want to give yashar koach to Yaakov and to the organizers of the program. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people who may not have enough of an opportunity to learn and to hear shiurim, and it gives us the opportunity, the rabbanim in general, and particularly people from Eretz Yisrael, to be able to share Torah with people here from different communities. And so I want to be mechazik those who are maintaining and making this possible, and we have to Shemesh continue for many years to come. I actually wasn't sure which topic to teach. I'll mention it to you because I was told, you know, that the other topic wouldn't interest people. I'd like to see if they were right. Baruch Hashem in Yeshivat HaKotel, we started a 12-part series for the Shenabet boys on the topic of dating and marriage. And I think Shenabet is too early to start talking about it, but since if it doesn't get spoken about then, it doesn't get ever spoken about. I want to make sure that the boys know what a proper marriage is about. And so the first shiur actually I give, it's called Men Are From Earth and Women Are From Men, which is really just Parshas Bereishis, but understanding that is important. So I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice to give that shiur here? So the person I was in touch with wrote, no, they're all married already. I guess that means, you know, we realize it's hopeless and, you know, there's nothing to learn about it. I said, what do you mean? It's a shiur for married people to understand marriage. Yeah, so we do have these booklets, so we're going to be moving forward this year. But would people be interested in that for next time?
Yes.
Okay. So please let whoever one lets know about this. I will be back in America a couple more times, and I'd be happy to give that shiur if people want. This shiur is also very good. At least I think so. It could be another good fellow. In any case, the title definitely is a shocking one, because I don't think any of us would think that we should learn chinuch from Esav and Yishmael, and so I guess I'm yotzei the SR goal of sensational topics. Baruch Hashem, I'm very thankful to those who've uploaded Rabbi Lam's drashot, his sermons, onto the Lam Heritage Archives, the YU website. It's so wonderful to be able to read really masterpieces. I highly recommend them, and his titles are very special as well. And so you really see how the title can make a very big difference. What's the common denominator between Esav and Yishmael? The common denominator is that if you look the way the Torah describes them, neither of them are described in demonic ways. They seem, kids. Yet, the Mesorah and the way Chazal perceive them, diabolical. In fact, Chazal perceived them as very similar to one another. And I can summarize it as people who violated the most serious averos possible, the Gimel Chamuros. If you take a look at the first page here, Rashi regarding Yishmael, again, it's the name of Chazal, says that he was Mitzachek. Rashi says, he quotes three opinions, Lashon Avodas Alilim, Lashon Gilui Arayos, Lashon Ritzicha. Be careful the next time you laugh. This is what they might say about you. Now, this is surprising because in the very same context, if you look, the Makor was in the bottom of this page 2 and on page 3, and we'll get back to that a little bit more in depth. Sarah laughed. Avram laughed. Sarah was even criticized by Hashem for laughing, but we don't say she violated the Shalosh Chamuros. In fact, in case it wasn't clear that laughter is a good thing, Yitzchak is named after that laughter. So, maybe Yishmael's laughter wasn't as great as Sarah and Avram's laughter, but so bad that it's the Shalosh Chamurot? And frankly, it's a bit surprising to say that Avram would have a son like this. And this sentiment is expressed by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the second source here. Shimon Bar Yochai says a really spectacular statement. He says there are four things that Rabbi Akiva was Doresh. Akiva was his Rebbe, Shimon Bar Yochai's Rebbe. Vin Dvarai Nirin Midvarov. But my words seem more right than his. Shemecha had a real problem with what Rabbi Akiva said. And the first is about this pasuk of Tzchok. He quotes the three different opinions from earlier Tanoim, quoted here in the Tosefta. And then he, in the third paragraph, says, Va'ani omer, chas v'shalom sheyia beveito sheloto tzadik hahu kach. Efshel amisha namar lav ki yadativ laman asher yitzaveh v'chule. Yadaveto avoda kochavim v'gilui arayot u'shvichut amim hayitachen, says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And that's the question I'd like to ask. on all those other pshatim. How do they understand? How could this be possible? What's interesting, though, is that we find a similar type of description regarding Esav. If you look at the Targum Yonatan on the Pasuk, it talks about Esav, Yaakov, their meeting in the beginning of Parsha Toldo, this week's Parsha. Talks about how Esav, that day when he came home tired, had just violated 5 Averot. What are the 5? Palach Pulchana Nuchra, Avodah Zarah, Shofach Adama Zakya, Shvichas Damim, Ol Al Ulimta Marosa, Gilei Arayot, Kofer B'chaye Alma, he was Kofer in the next world, Uvaza Yas B'chirusa, fifth kind of doesn't seem to fit in well. And he was Mivaza the Bechor. That's together with these 4 serious Averot. Chazal understood that Esav and Yishmael were the worst of the worst. And the 2 spin-offs of Avram and Yitzchak's homes respectively. And the question I'd like to ask is, you can formulate it 2 ways. How did Chazal know it? And I don't mean on the historical plane, so or not. And where did it come from? How is it possible? What are we meant to learn from the fact that this is what happened to these 2 children of the others? So I think the issue is different in each of them, Yishmael and Esav. But the similarity is that by both of them we're dealing with a character flaw, a hashkafic issue, respectively, that's very slight, that in and of itself is not even an avera, but can be the beginning of the end, can be the beginning of a problem. So I think we all know, all of us who have children and or have been involved in any educational institution, we know that the challenge is to deal with issues before they become symptomatic. Not to deal with the water on the floor, but to deal with the leaky faucet before the water's on the floor. Not to deal with the problems that result when chinuch isn't going well, but to deal with the root causes that generate those problems. And I think that's what we're meant to appreciate about Yishmael and Esav. Not just to say they were bad kids, they violated the Gimel Chamorz, we should kick them out of school. But to see what started a process that ended with the Gimel Chamorz. So let's begin with Yishmael, who was mitzachik. As I mentioned earlier, surprising that this would be seen as negative. In light of the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, the general theme within the parsha of tzchok. I think this is why the Ibn Ezra says, on the pasuk of mitzachik, ki chein minag kol nar. What was Yishmael doing? What kids do? They laugh, they play, they have a good time. He sees it as something innocuous. Now, of course, the problem is, why would Sarah seeing that lead her to reach the conclusion that he has to be kicked out? And not only that she would reach that conclusion, but that Hashem would agree with her. I think this is why most Rishonim and the Tanaim, as we've seen, say otherwise. Rashi explains that the Mitzachik was his attempt to fight with Yitzchak about the Yerusha. Shahaya Meirivim Yitzchak al Yerusha. If you go back to the Tosefta on page 2, that's actually Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's suggestion. After he says Chas v'Shalom to say what the other Tanoim said, he says Ela Ein Tzchok Ha'amur Kan Ela Le'inyon Yerusha. Shekeshenolad Avinu Yitzchak LaAvraham Avinu Hayu Hakol Smeichin V'Omim Nolad Ben LeAvraham Nochal Et Ha'olam Noto Shnei Chalakim. It was Yishmael's denial, it was Yishmael's difficulty to accept the change in his status and his position. And this is one of the most difficult things in life. Now, we are born into the world, we have our ambitions, we have our hopes, both within our families, within our communities, within our jobs, and we develop dreams, and unfortunately, the reality sometimes limits those dreams. And the question is, what do we do then? Are we able to adapt to that reality and make the most of our potential, the newfound, maybe new directed potential, to turn the lemon into lemonade? Or do we try and fight against the night? Do we try and laugh it off? Do we live in denial, and then when the reality denies us, we fight against it, we throw it all away, we decide, Time for the Gimel Chaburah. So on this first level, you see in Rashi, and the Rashbam expresses this as well, he explains what Sarah's fears were, towards the bottom of page 3. What they're speaking about is Yishmael's inability to accept his place within the family. I think that this is an important lesson for us, both in our own lives, children within our own families, how many children who are adults continue acting as children, competing within their families, comes time for Yerusha, for other things, and the sad relationships that we generate with each other, that our children observe in us, when we're unwilling to accept that this is our family, these are the relationships, maybe we would like them to be otherwise, but we need to go with what it is. And I think it's important also, in the way we're mechanech our children, of course the best way to be mechanech is by the example we set. So first of all, we should live properly, but second of all, we should speak properly. We should help each child understand that they have a place, they have a role, and Yishmael did have a place and a role. It just wasn't to be the chosen son of Avram, it was to realize other goals, which are spoken to him. God had prophecies about Yishmael and his people. The question is whether you're satisfied with that and whether you pursue it. And so we ourselves have to try and live up to this and try to be mechanech along the same lines. The Ramban, though, takes it in a more sharp direction. I think the Ramban's direction has another lesson in it for us. And I think the Ramban's pshat has a lot of basis also in the context of laughing in Parshat Vayera. The Ramban claims, bottom of page 3, moving on to page 4, "Anachon ve'inai shahaya zev yom higamelet Yitzchak." The day Yitzchak was weaned, big accomplishment. "V'ra'ata oto malig al Yitzchak b'al ha'mishteh gadol." Sarah saw Yishmael mocking, not laughing out of shock, surprise, happiness, but mocking. Mocking what was going on in Yitzchak's life. And of course, what the Ramban suggests could easily flow out of what Rashi was talking about. If you don't accept your place and you see things that are enshrining the Yoresh who's come in your place, and you don't want to accept it as it is, so you mock it. I think there's basis for this, because if we look on the top of page 4, you remember that Tzachik is used in the same context, used so many times in Parshat Vayera, in reference to Lot. Lot tries to encourage his daughters and sons-in-law to abandon Sdom, and it says, "Vayihi kimitzachik v'einei chatanav." They weren't laughing about the situation, they were laughing at Lot. Now, of course, that mockery was deadly for them. And according to Chazal, I think we see what it led to for Yishmael. Because if a person has a problem taking things at the face level of their severity, then even things that are of greater significance can be belittled. Again, it all begins with a person being comfortable with themselves, with their place, even as it changes, and being able to respect the other people around them, the other realities in their life. And this seems to have been an issue for Yishmael. Now, truthfully, to be fair, I think we can all understand where it came from and be sympathetic to him. I think that's a very important part of chinuch too. Not just to see where people have a problem, but to see the legitimate base of the problem. Our hearts should go out to Yishmael. But on the other hand, he didn't have the maturity, or he wasn't given the maturity, or helped properly to deal with it in the right way. Of course, one could ask, why wasn't he? It seems very tragic. It seems that Avram wanted to help Yishmael, wanted to keep him around. But unfortunately, it wasn't possible, I guess, because of the dynamics of what were going on historically. It's a tragedy that, irrespective of what it was for Yishmael, and of course, Chazal say that Yishmael did tshuva, Rabbi Yishmael. Most importantly, it's a lesson for us to be able to see how a child's uncomfortability with his lot, especially when it translates itself in mockery, is something that can result in the Gimel Chamurah. In the second part of the shiur, I want to speak about Esav, and I think the lesson that we're meant to learn from Esav is even more significant and very sharp about how we look at life. Not our place, but our lives themselves, our life itself. If you take a look at the flow of this week's parasha, Parasha Toldot, of course we all know that Esav is not described in a demonic way. If anything, Yaakov's actions seem to be questionable at the least. You see Yitzchak's own words when Esav comes in for his bracha. Yitzchak says, Pasuk Lamed Hey, Ba achicha b'mirma, v'yikach birchatecha. That does not seem to be praiseworthy. Your brother has come in trickery and taken your bracha. Esav responds, Achi kara shmo Yaakov v'yakveni zefa amayim. Et b'chorati lakach v'hine ata lakach birchati. He begs his father, Hello, atzalti li bracha, is there nothing for me? You look back at that first story that Esav is connecting what happened later back to. Esav comes home from the field and he's tired. Yaakov is cooking. Of course, how many times are we told in the Torah that anyone was cooking? It makes you wonder why we need to get had food. Why do we need the information? He was cooking beans. In any case, Esav comes home and he's tired and he asks his brother for some food. And Yaakov says, well, what did you give me for it? That doesn't seem to portray Yaakov in a very positive light. And of course, this is where the Christians got the Shylock and all the other images of the Jewish people from. You can't give your brother food unless he'll sell you something? At face value, Esav is not the one who seems to be a demon. But of course, we're familiar with the fact that Chazal saw everything about Esav to be a sign of how evil he was. Beginning with the fact that we're told that he was reddish. Rashi quotes the Medrash, which says, "A simanu sheyesh shofech damim." Which is surprising because David HaMelech is also reddish. The Medrash, bottom of page 4, discusses the relationship between David's redness, Esav's redness. We're told in the same sukkim on page 4 that Esav was a yodei tzayid. He knew to hunt. Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing? Today, most of us don't need to hunt to survive, but in ancient times, the ability to hunt, what's better, to have a son who knows how to hunt or a son who sits in the tent? Objectively, I think Esav comes off sounding as having much more potential. Yodei tzayid, what does Chazal say about that, though? Top of page 5. Latsudu l'ramot et oviv b'fiv. Isn't it interesting how Chazal take the very word, the very attribute that Yitzchak attributes to Yaakov in a negative way, and they attribute it to Esav? He's the one who's being merame. Yaakov may have been merame, but it wasn't his nature. Esav was yodei tzayid, he was a merame. And it says in the next pasuk that Yitzchak loved Esav ki tzayid b'fiv, instead of interpreting, I think, the pasuk shot, because he fed him, Rashi says, he fooled him. Targum Yonatan says that the reason he came in tired is because he had been out murdering that day. Rashi quotes it, and of course, later on in Pasuk Chavtet, the source I began with, the five Averot. Where did Chazal get this from? Well, here we have a very clear source. If you take a look in Sefer Malachi in the Haftorah, it says there how Hashem had always loved Yaakov, the et Esav saneti, and he had hated Esav. This isn't Chazal, if you can't, Tanakh, Sefer Malachi. For some reason, Hashem hated Esav. And the question is why? Where did it begin? I believe there's a very clear indication in the Torah itself of where it began. And I think it's part of a pattern of personal reflection that we see throughout Parsha Toldot that are expressed through the usage of a very similar phrase. Lama ze anochi. Lama ani. Why? Who am I? Why am I? And it begins with Rivka herself. We all know from the Torah itself that Rivka is the one who not only suggests but encourages, facilitates Yaakov taking the bracha. Yaakov initially refuses. Rivka says, "Alaykel latcha b'ni." Unkelus famously adds to Rivka's words to her son Yaakov, V'amart le'ime, alai itamar b'nevua. It was said to be b'nevua, de'lo yetin lot yalach b'ri, that you won't be cursed for this. The question is, what nevua? This is a pretty important nevua. Shouldn't we have been told about this nevua? I think the answer to that question is that we were told about the nevua. We just didn't pay any attention to it. And the Rashbam, the Pashtun, refers us to it. Rashbam says in the same pasuk that she was sure that everything would be okay, and I believe you can add, this is why she did it. Because of what Hashem had said to her in the beginning of Parshat Toldot. V'rav ya'avod sa'ir. Remember the prophecy she was given about how there are two nations in her belly. V'rav ya'avod sa'ir. Sa'ir means the younger. The older will serve the younger. This is what motivated, drove Rivka and made her realize that she had to take action. She was told this prophecy to ensure that the prophecy would fulfill itself. How did Rivka get this prophecy? Why did she receive it and not Yitzchak? Well, if you look at the psukim, it says that the children were running around in her stomach. And clearly this was an exceptional type of pain, because otherwise she just would have taken pills, right? Or whatever they did then. What does she do when she's feeling this? And I think this is why Chazal say that it was going to a church, going to a Beis Medrash, because why did it strike her as something she should ask God about? If you look at the words in the end of Pasuk Chaf Bet, Vatomer, after she felt this, Im Kain, Lama Ze Anochi. Why am I? For what am I? She's asking real questions about herself. I think Chazal are trying to fill in the backdrop of what led her to this kind of question. If I have children who want such different things, Vateleich Lidrosh Et Hashem. We couldn't possibly seek a better model of a person channeling, expressing, dealing properly with a question they can't answer, with something in their lives that doesn't make sense. Vateleich Lidrosh Et Hashem. I think Rivka is giving the prophecy because she seeks it and she takes responsibility not only to believe in the prophecy but to make sure it's realized. And I think this is only the beginning of the story. Because the same words that Rivka uses are used a mere few psukim later, and it's interesting to see how quickly the beginning of Parshat Toldot moves from the birth to the events of their youth. When Esav is faced with a choice between the food and the bechor, what is cheshbon? Vayomer Esav, hine anochi holech lamut. These words should also be in bold. Vilama zeli bechora. So similar to his mother, yet so different. What's Esav say? Who cares what's written on my tombstone? Very sensible claim. The Chizkuni expresses this, I think, in historical perspective, moving on to the top of page 6. He says, the Bechor has a nafkamina in 400 years from now, right? Who's going to work in the Beis HaMikdash? I now should give up food for something that will make a difference in 400 years after I'm dead? Being practical New Yorkers, I think it's redundant. We can all identify with this question. But the Ramban flips it over. The Ramban on page 6 says, of course it's not the Ramban, it's the Torah. The Torah rarely passes judgment on its characters. It tells you the story and gives you the chance to make the decision. It wants you to reach the conclusion. I think the Torah passes judgment when it's unclear. And because many of us are sympathetic to what Esav says, Hine anochi holech lamut, lama zeli b'chora, the Torah concludes, pardon me, back in the bottom of page 5, says he ate, he drank, he got up, he left, and the Torah concludes with what words? Vayivez Esav et habechora. Ramban explains, top of page 6, Vezo sibat bizuya bechora, ki ein chefetz baksilim rak sheyochlu v'yishtu v'yasu chafatzam b'itam, v'lo yachushu liyom machar. Ramban says this was the litmus test of Esav's character. Esav had a real issue. He was a realist. Who cares about anything, since in the end, death eliminates everything that we've accomplished? So really all we should care about is staying alive. Really all that matters is food. We know that sentiment built inside us. Esav's life is about fueling his life. And of course, Esav's nation gets its name from the redness of the food we just read about. Haliteini na min ha'adom, ha'adom ha'adom ha'al kein karash mo edom, is the Torah. His life was about the characteristics of the food that sustained him. So what is the difference between man and animal then? What's the goal of an animal's life? To eat and stay alive. What's the goal of human life? Then nothing matters, right? Does the life of another person matter? Does the relationship that another person has with a spouse matter? Does what God you serve matter? Small little flaw is the beginning of the end of everything. And what's interesting is that we live in a society that has given up on any true answers to the question of the meaning of life. Even people who are religious, many of them, I would say most of them, people who identify with a religion, don't genuinely believe that that religion gives their lives value. It's a write-off. It shouldn't be a shock to us that our society doesn't know how to deal with death, and therefore ignores it, lives in denial of it. It's amazing how that central feature of our existential nature is marginalized. Rivka is very aware of death. Continuing on at the end of the parsha, when she's afraid that Esav is going to kill Yaakov, she uses the word lama for a third time. Rivka is an existentially sensitive person. Lama ishkal gam shnechem yom echad. You might respond, who cares? In the end, they'll both die anyway, right? What difference does it make? Look at Yitzchak, same parsha. He's also thinking about death. Hine nazakanti lo yadati yom moti. I better make sure, as soon as possible, to pass on the bracha to the next generation. It's a constructive way of dealing with the reality of our lives. It's a seriousness that's engendered in response to the limitations to our mortality. Yitzchak is a true expression of the way all of us should relate to this reality. The Gemara in Baba Basra questions whether Shchiv Meiraz, commitments, are real. Gemara concludes that they are, because ein adam shata b'shat mita. A person doesn't say things that aren't serious. You know, we have all kinds of manipulations and goals and agendas while we're alive, but at the end, reality is sitting. And this question about how to relate to death is central in Sefer Kohelet. We all know that Kohelet is a depressing book. The question is whether we know what we're supposed to take out of it constructively. In fact, I believe that Kohelet is the most important book in Tanakh, and therefore the most important book in the world. In Yeshiva, I give a shir on Hashkafa, I begin with Sefer Kohelet. I think the real problem that many people have believing is that it's very hard to believe in anything. Chafetz Chaim once said that no one believes in God 100%. If they did, they would always do everything right. I think our attempt to continue trying to convince ourselves of things is destined for failure, because we don't believe in what we don't see. We believe in what we do see, even when we're fooled by magicians, but we don't believe in what we don't see. The goal of Kohelet is not to convince us to believe in God and in Judaism. It's to convince us that the other things we believe in instead definitely don't matter and amount to nothing. So it can be easier for us to believe in the things that make sense and can amount to something. Kohelet doesn't aim to move us from 85% belief in God to 90 or 100% belief in God. It just aims to eliminate all the other options. So much of our lives are investing in things which definitely mean nothing because of our unsurety about what means anything. So I think ultimately, Machshavat Yisrael, we should try and strengthen our belief from 80% to 85%, as much as we can. But we also have to have a sober evaluation of what everything else is worth. And the number one factor that eliminates the potential significance of everything in life is death. And this is why death is such a prominent factor in Sefer Kohelet. If we take a look, bottom of page 6, Kohelet Perek Beis, it says, "V'ra'iti ani she'yesh yitron la'chokhma min ha'sichlut." There's an advantage to wisdom over foolishness. "Ki yitron ha'or min ha'choshech." Like the advantage of being in the light over the darkness. "Hechacham einav b'rosho v'haksil b'choshech olech." Chachma gives you so much, yet v'yadati gam ani shemikre echad yikret kulam. But what does it mean if in the end the same thing happens to all of us? V'amarti ani b'libi kimikre haksil gam ani yikreni. V'lama chachamti ani az yoter. So why did I work so hard on developing myself if in the end it gets me no further than it gets the fool? What does it mean if people with PhDs die the same way as people with no education? Later in Perek Gimel he says, "Amarti ani b'libi al divrat b'nei ha'adam livara me'elokim," regarding what people say about themselves, that man has been chosen by God, tzelem elokim, etc. "V'lirot shehem behema hema lahem." I see that in truth, man is more like animal than he wants to admit. And what's the ultimate proof? "Ki mikre v'nei ha'adam u'mikre ha'behema u'mikre echad lahem. Kimot zeh, kein mot zeh. V'ruach echad lakol u'motar ha'adam min ha'behema ayin. Ki hakol havel, hakol olech el makom echad. Hakol haya min ha'afar, v'hakol shav el ha'afar." So what difference does it make? He concludes the first part of the Sefer. There's a big tet that begins the second part in the beginning of Perek Zayin. Perek Vav, he concludes by speaking about that no matter how many years we live and how many children we have. I hear so often from people when they get older and having grandchildren, "Wish I'd had another child. If I'd had another child, I would feel more complete." I can tell you as consolation that no matter how many children you have, we have built into our system the fact that we're never satisfied. There's always more. There's always what we haven't accomplished. Kohelet says, very strong pasuk, Perek Vav, pasuk Gimel. Let's look at pasuk Vav. "Ilu chaya elef shanim." If a person lived 1,000 years, pa'amayim, twice, v'tov lora, he still doesn't feel like he seemed good because ha'alohel makom echad hakol olech. We're traumatized by our mortality, which leads us to this tension of never being satisfied because we know the time is running out. Imagine if we lived forever. People wouldn't be in a rush. They would probably be nicer to each other also, because you can't burn friendships. You're going to be around with each other for a very long time. This tension comes from the fact that we know we're all heading to the same place. Pasuk Chet, "Ki ma yoter lechacham min aksil, ma le'ani yodea la'aloch neged ha'chaim." What can we do to fight the realities of life? And therefore, put it on top of page 7, "Yesh dvarim harbei marbim havel, ma yoter la'adam." We wonder what gives us an advantage. "Mi yodea ma tov la'adam b'chaim, mispar yimei chayei avlo." Death seems to undermine the significance of everything. And of course, the sentiment that Yeshayahu quotes, being expressed by the Jews of Yerushalayim when they were being laid siege upon, they were depressed, they believed they had no future. "Achol v'shato," let's eat and drink, "ki machar namut." What difference does it make? Look back for a second to the Ramban, top of page 6, I believe he's paraphrasing these psukim in Kohelet, and the pasuk from Yeshayahu. Let's go back. "Ki ein chefetz baksilim, rak sheyochlu v'yishdu v'yasu chafetzam b'itam." 8 lasot, right? The 8s of Kohelet Perek Gimel. "V'lo yachushu liyom machar. Achol v'shato ki machar namut." Not thinking about what comes later because we believe it doesn't matter. Back on page 7, the words of Sancho and Don Quixote, if we realize that life ultimately ends with nothing, then let us make hay while the sun shines. Or the sentiment expressed by Macbeth about life being but a walking shadow, a poor player struts and frets his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing, expressing sharply the depression man feels when he recognizes that ultimately we're here, we're gone, we're forgotten. This is the world of Esav. This is a world where if a person falls into the trap of not believing in life because he feels he can't transcend death, that nothing matters. Not even your own firstborn. Kohelet continues in the second part of the Sefer in Perek Zayin, in the very beginning. Here you don't see the big tet, but it is a big tet in the Tanakh. Tov shem mishemen tov v'yom hamavet miyom hivaldo. What a strange statement. The day of death is greater than the day of birth. The name we accomplish, we develop for ourselves during our lives is better than the oils a young baby is soaked in. If we had a choice this afternoon of going to a wedding or going to a base avel, says Kohelet, Tov lalechet el beit avel mi lechet el beit mishteh. Better to go to the funeral home, to the mourner's home. Ba'asher hu sof kol ha'adam ve'achai yitein alibo. We're not undermined by death, we seek to learn from death. We reflect on what others have accomplished in their lives, and we seek to learn from that how to make our lives as meaningful as possible. We know we're limited, and we want to keep that in mind to make sure to take advantage of every moment we have. This is the difference between Yaakov and Esav, because Chazal tell us, bottom of page 7, that Yaakov was cooking the lentils because it was the day when Avraham Avinu had died. What basis did Chazal have for saying that there was death in the family? Well, Esav was definitely thinking about death. What brings someone to recognize Hineh Anochi Holech Lamut? Imagine you're Yaakov and Esav. You're raised in the house of Yitzchak near Avraham, this great revolutionary. Avraham! There are hundreds, thousands of people who have been impacted by him. And one day, he dies. So what did he accomplish? He died just like the cow that died yesterday. What does that mean about everything he was and everything he did? He died too. It really doesn't matter. So I'll kill and steal and do whatever I can while I can. I don't need v'chor. And what's Yaakov doing the very same day? He's cooking lentils, and Rashi explains, V'lama osim these things at a base evel, shedomot legalgal, sha'avilut galgal achozer ba'olam. The circle of life. Yaakov says, it's true Avram's dead, but he created something that was passed to Yitzchak, and it's going to be passed to one of his children, and it's going to be passed to that person's children. And I'm going to die too, but one day I'll be remembered. And God will be related to by my children as Elokei Yaakov. And it won't be for 400 years until someone is working in the Mikdash. But I want it to be my children. I want to prepare for them. This was Avram's legacy, you know. Avram said to Hashem, Bama eida ki irashena. Translation. How can I know that I will inherit it? So Hashem does the Brit Ben Absarim with him and says, your children will go into a foreign land for 400 years, but don't worry, eventually they'll come back. Avram should have said, I don't think you heard my question. But for Avram, it wasn't me in the selfish, narrow sense. It was me in the life and the people I've begun sense. I'm going to digress for a second to share an idea that I think is very important in this context. It's a little surprising that God has to examine what he created each day of creation and see that it was good. Mela, we try to create something. We do the best we can. I don't know if it'll be good. Despite our best intentions, we have to look at it afterwards and ask ourselves if it's good. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's creating exactly what he wants. He has no restrictions. He looked at it and he saw that it was good. The lesson, obviously, is for us to know that Hashem doesn't want to just create a world. He wants to create a good world. Which is surprising because we see how bad the world we live in is. How did the world get so bad? Because the world was given over to man, right? Why do women suffer in childbirth? Why do men have to sweat when they work? Why are relationships between husbands and wife about domination and not the way they're supposed to be? Read Perek Beis, more exactly Gimel. But what's interesting within creation is that there's one thing besides Yom Gimel, which isn't really a thing, it's a context. On the sixth day, God creates all the animals. Chayot Haaretz. And it says, God looked at them and they were good. And then, it says he created man. And it doesn't say God looked at him and thought that he was good. Why is that? Because man wasn't good. Very next parak, what does it say? Lo tov heyot adam. Man wasn't good. Man has a yetzer hara. Why did God create man not good? I think we have to understand for ourselves before we educate others what the yetzer hara is. Maybe from the images we remember as kids, we imagine the yetzer hara as being this devilish fiend trying to get us to do bad. I don't think most people have a yetzer that wants them to be bad. Maybe eventually it expresses itself that way. Lo tov heyot ha'adam livado. Man is not good when he's all about himself. Of course, when do we get to hear about man's ra? The end of the parasha, the backdrop to the Dor HaMabul. Why did God regret, in quote, creating man? Because he saw that his machshavot are rak ra kol hayom. Or as it says later in Parshat Noach, Raminu Rav. How did that roa express itself in the Dor HaMabul? It was selfishness. Theft. Taking other people's wives. Chamas. Even Noach was a tzaddik bedorosov, according to Chazal. He was frum, but he was selfish. It was about himself. It's one of the big problems in the society we live in. Selfishness. The Yetzer Hara is not bad. He's just me. The Yetzer Hara is the part of us that tries to encourage ourselves to care only about ourselves. The bad we see is the implication of caring only about ourselves. Lo tov heyot ha'adam levado. I'm going to create another being that he can give to and care for. And that's really the answer to the limitations of our own lives. If we can't raise ourselves to express the moral compass we have inside ourselves that drives us to care about other people, we will have no choice but to reach the conclusion that our lives end with nothing. But if we can care about other people, first and foremost, our own children, Kohelet talks about how this selfishness can lead to a situation where gam ben va'achin lo, even children and brothers you don't have because all you are is about yourself. But if we're able to live this way, the circle of the lentil, then we're able to see our lives as preparing for something that continues. To be inspired by those who live this way, to continue being links in that kind of chain. Look on page 8, see how Chazal try to channel this sense of mortality. Famous Mishnah in Avot, where Rabbi Eliezer says, "Shuv yom echad lefnei mitatcha." Talmidim asked him, the Maran Shabbat, "V'chi adam yodea eze yom yamut?" This is the most difficult part of the reality of life and death. Kohelet talks about how what's so dangerous about death is that it comes suddenly. Person knew how long they could live, they could plan, they could take advantage. I don't know. I always say that soccer is a sport that's most truly expressive of the reality of life. We want to take control over the unpredictable natures of this world, so we create sports that have a clock, a certain number of seconds, you can plan how many plays you want to have, you can have timeouts. The world doesn't work that way. Most of us probably don't know much about soccer, but for those who don't know, When does the game end? When the referee decides to blow the whistle. He should know, as of 10 years ago, the referee didn't even have to give an estimate of how many minutes he was going to add. And then Manchester beat Bayern München in the championship with goals in extra time, and people had enough. So now he has to announce how many minutes he's going to add, but he's not mechuyev to stick to it. They have this great commercial in Israel where the ref is running around and running around. All of a sudden, he sees out of the corner of his eye an ad for McDonald's, and he blows the whistle and runs off. You wonder how arbitrary it is. But that's the reality of life. You don't know how long is left. So the Talmidim asked him, how can we accomplish this? And he said, V'choshken yashuv hayom shema yamut l'machar v'nimtza kol yamav b'tshuva. The reality of the limitation by death and its unpredictable suddenness can help a person take advantage of every day. It's sharper than just saying, Al tomalach she'efna eshna shema lo tipane. It's not only shema lo tipane, it's shema you won't be here. It can be channeled into something constructive. And I think that this is the backdrop for understanding the Gemara in Brachot, which says that David HaMelech's uniqueness was that he was able to say Shira to Hashem, five different stages of life. The first was when he was in the womb. What kind of great soul had the ability to say Shira in the womb? The last, each one needs discussion, but the last is Nistakil b'yom hamita v'yamar Shira. How many people can say Shira when facing the day of death? Can praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us the limitation of death, which forces us to take our lives seriously. Now Batsheva comes to David HaMelech as he's about to die and gives him brachas. And it wasn't a Misha Berech HaCholim. What brachas? He's about to die. In Gimel Elul, we take the boys to the kever of Rav Kook. It's his yahrzeit. Rav Kook's tombstone is very nondescript. There's no Harav, Hagadol, Moreinu, Verabenu, Le'olam Vaed, none of that stuff. It has his name. And then it has three lines. Allah, Eretz Yisrael, and the date. Allah, Yerushalayim, and the date. Allah, Hashemayim, and the date. Rav Kook saw his life as a series of aliyot. And of course, those who know about the challenge of making aliyah to Eretz Yisrael know that the danger is that when people make aliyah, they think they're done making aliyah. That was Rav Kook's first aliyah. Aliyah is a process of constantly continuing to raise oneself up. And the third aliyah was when he died. Allah Hashemayim. The only one mentioned on the tombstone. Maybe there were more. I think this explains the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Two tipot, two babies, in the stomach together. The Medrash interprets the pasuk of Ashrei Tivchar V'Tikarev. There are some who are chosen by God and some who bring themselves close, some who are both. Yaakov was chosen by Hashem, Ki Yaakov Bachar Loka, but God did nothing to draw him close. Yaakov had to draw himself close. Hu kirev et atzmo shenemar v'Yaakov ishtam yoshev olam. And Yaakov was makarev himself by choosing the path of constructive and meaningful life. Medrash also tells us, Ein dor shein bo ki Avram v'ein dor shein bo ki Yaakov, etc. ki Moshe, ki Shmuel. And now Yaakov, I think it makes particular sense because the existential choice about how to relate to death is something we all face. To bring it back together, Esav and Yishmael were not created particularly evil and didn't go off the derech because they met someone bad in high school. Each one had a very slight, subtle problem. One, how he related to the reality of life. The other, how he related to the reality of death. And that can lead to the most severe averot if a person does not know how to properly, maturely, soberly, constructively reflect on the values of life. And so hopefully these are things that we can remind ourselves of, because we all have our high points and we all have our low points. We all have times when the realities of life can depress us. when the limitations of our own lives can frustrate us. And we want to make sure to bring out the best side of ourselves for ourselves and for others who learn from how we carry ourselves. Shavua Tov.